Welcome back to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. What happens when art pushes the boundaries of form, creating something that feels both familiar and otherworldly? That's the idea behind the Strange Flesh and Other Fantasies exhibition at the Dover Art League, featuring the work of local artist and Delaware State University assistant professor Josh Nobling. Through intricate drawings and prints, Nobling crafts what he calls strange flesh and nothing things, abstract textured pieces that shift between the organic and the surreal. In this edition of Arts Playlist, Delaware Public Media's Martin Matheny is joined by Nobling for a closer look at Strange Flesh and Other Fantasies.
I'd like to start by just asking you about your background and how you got started making art and how you got to this point.
Well, I've been drawing ever since I can remember. So, kindergarten, I suppose, or preschool, actually, I think is my first memory of drawing. It's always been a friend of mine, it's been a constant in my life. Growing up can be awkward and things. So you're getting picked on like, a lot of people do and things like that. It can be kind of a lonely time growing up. So I was always given sketchbooks and things, and it's just always been there for me. So I started out that way as an artist.
For people who have never seen it, how would you describe the work that you're doing now?
I would say I work in grotesques. So I'm very inspired, as I said, by horror movies and 80s pop culture, but also medieval art and Northern Renaissance, like Bosch and things. I love grotesque things. I like distorted things, strange, unusual faces and combinations of different strange characters and landscapes, and just kind of a lot of fantasy work. All of my work is improvisational, so I never start with a plan. I always just start with a blank surface, and it just starts with one line. The hardest thing is deciding where that one line goes, and then they grow from there until I feel they're complete. So people that aren't familiar with my work can expect to see very strange things, a lot of question marks, things that really don't make sense, and they don't have to. And people can interpret it however they'd like. But it's odd, off the wall. Might even say it's similar to the lowbrow art movement.
I love that you mentioned grotesques, because that's something that a lot of times we think about art as beauty, but the grotesque is woven throughout art history. Medieval art, for example, I think about two things when I think about grotesques. I think about medieval art and especially medieval tombs and gargoyles. And then I think about 80s metal band album covers.
Yes.
I wonder if you can talk a little bit about sort of the role the grotesque plays in art history.
That's okay. This is one of my favorite subjects. So, the term grotesque originally stems from the grottos, such as Nero's grotto and things. And you would see these decorations would be maybe theater masks or just a strange face, on one of the frescoes for reasons unknown to us, or perhaps lost in time. We also see in cathedrals and things, you might, I always tell my students, imagine being in a church setting and you're in the presence of this holy mindset and things. And then you look way up to the ceiling and there's a demon picking its nose and looking at you. So we would see those things. Also, medieval manuscripts, there were these things called drolleries, which were not related to the text necessarily, but they'd be in the margins. They're also called marginalia illustrations. So you would see a person with giant bird feet and playing a trumpet, or something, just strange little funny, humorous, distorted little figures and animal combinations. So we do see that all over art history. We see a lot of strange things, and also in different cultures, all the different cultures throughout history There's some kind of, whether it's gods or goddesses that are combinations of animals and humans, or the grotesques that are just kind of strange and for no reason. You mentioned gargoyles. I like to remind people of the distinction of a gargoyle and a grotesque. A lot of times people call, for instance, they'll see something with horns, a demonic looking thing, and a statue on top of a building, and they'll call that a gargoyle. Well, a gargoyle is different from a grotesque in that the gargoyle serves a purpose and the grotesque doesn't. The gargoyle, as the name suggests, like gargling water, they'll have a water spout inside the statue to redirect rainwater away from the foundation of the building. So, I like to be Mr. Technical and say, well, it's not a gargoyle unless it's serving that structural purpose. But the term grotesque has kind of grown to cover a lot of different grounds. As far as like the purpose it serves, grotesque and things, I think it's just something about being a human and observing the world around us. I like to think of my strange drawings and my grotesqueries as a reflection on what's going on around me, but not always. It's a lot of improvisation. I think of them as kind of mysterious things that have just bubbled up over time and in every culture, and also nature. You mentioned beauty and the grotesque. Of course, I find grotesque very beautiful and things, distortions and things like that. In nature, it's all around us. I really don't have to invent anything on my own or struggle to be creative on any given day because it's all in nature. So a lot of what I do, even though it looks like strange lands and things, it's a lot of just observing, lichens and dead wood and bug-eaten things and collecting insect carcasses and, and just observing them and taking from them and drawing and kind of resynthesizing the details into a composition. So the grotesque is everywhere.
You sometimes call your work nothing things, and I wonder if you could parse that out a little bit for me.
So my background is I got my undergraduate degree at Southern Illinois University, studying painting, drawing, and printmaking. And it was all figurative work. It was all studying for models, live models. I like to say that it was kind of, the same thing every semester. It was great practice, but every class was the same. Here's a model, you're going to draw that. So my background's in figurative work. But I've kind of grown to take away the figures a little bit or let them morph into things so they're not strictly figurative works. And then that morphing grew into making things that are suggestive, like shapes and textures that are suggestive of a being or a person or a face, for instance. But they start almost disintegrating the longer I make work. And the more work I make, those things are going away and they come back. So I call them nothing things because they tend to suggest things, but they're nothing. They're nothing. It's almost like when you look at the clouds as a child or an adult and you see things in the clouds. It's your mind's trying to turn it into something else, trying to reorganize it into something recognizable. So I kind of play with that idea and making things that are almost something, almost telling a story, but then they upon further inspection, they're not really saying anything. They're kind of frivolous. I don't really question what I do since it's all improvisational. But when I reflect on it, I see influences and I say, well, there's a lot of things in life that are uncertain or they appear to be one thing. But then when you research them or look into them more, you realize they kind of disintegrate and it's not what you thought it was.
You've touched a couple of times on your creative process being improvisatory. What is your creative process? How do you go from a blank sheet to a finished product?
It always just starts with one line, one mark. I like to think of myself as a conduit, and I tell all of my students, and I'd like all other artists to think this way because I feel like it's very freeing. Because a lot of times people get in this artist block thing. So, oh, it's artist block. I got an artist block. I don't feel like making anything today. I really believe that it's like plugging something into a wall, right? If I don't plug my fan into the wall, the blades aren't going to move. So for me, putting the pencil down on the paper is like plugging something into the wall. And I believe that there's a creative energy, kind of a wellspring that's there for everybody who can plug in and who decides to sit down and plug in. So whatever that is, getting the clay out, composing music, whatever it is, sitting down and plugging it in, touching that pencil to paper and moving it, then the electricity runs through and then things start to happen. And I've just become so comfortable with creating art for so long that I don't question it. I just sit down. And that's the hardest part a lot of times is just putting that thing down, making that one decision. But then it always grows into something else. And I don't believe in mistakes. I don't believe in second guessing yourself. I believe in just moving forward and keep adding to it, trusting your instincts, and then ultimately trusting the voice that tells you when it's done. But that's my process every time. I do painting, printmaking, traditional printmaking, and drawing mainly. It's all, it just all kind of grows, but I have to plug it in.
And then finally, what do you hope people who see your work at the Art League, what do you hope people take away from this exhibition?
My first answer is I don't hope anything because I have no control over that. So I don't really think about that. I hope, however, I hope people are entertained, and I hope they maybe smile, or it intrigues them a little bit, or maybe with the nothing thing idea, maybe they're drawn in and they, oh, I almost see something. Oh, maybe I, oh no, what is that? I like when people look at my work and say, so it kind of looks like this is going on, but then that's kind of, but then, so it's like a little puzzle, and I leave it that way. So there is that room for interpretation. And with my work alone, I really don't have any hopes or expectations other than I hope people enjoy it. And then the message, which I have up in two of the statements in the gallery on these posters, I have a little message on there, a lot of what we've just talked about creativity, and there's no mistakes. I really believe in the fact that, for instance, you, Martin, are the only version of you that has ever existed on this planet, will ever exist again. There might be people that look like you or anybody else, but you're the only one in this moment of the universe. So there's great power in your ideas. And so I want other artists to take that and to give them confidence and quit thinking about, oh, I can't do that. I'm not creative. Oh, I wish I could do that. Oh, I don't have that gift. I don't have this or that. No, you have something in there that will never happen again. So let it out and don't doubt what's coming out. Don't second guess it. Let it out, refine it, put your care into it, put your love into it, and then let it go and then move on to the next thing.
Thanks to artist and DSU assistant professor Josh Nobling and R. Martin Matheny for joining us on this edition of Arts Playlist. Strange Flesh and Other Fantasies, Drawings and Prints by Josh Nobling is on display at the Dover Art League through March 13th. And we wrap up the green next with History Matters, where we take a look at a new immersive project that chronicles the story of the Nassau School in the historic black community of Belltown near Lewis. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.